5:15. Happy hour! Welcome to it. The Crazy Horse Tavern brings it to you Monday through Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. News Sports Talk 98.7 AM 1370 and WGCLradio.com. So wherever you are listening today, we've had our friends check in from Napa Valley last week, Orlando the week before that. We're trying to be coast to coast, and here we go. And this afternoon, if that's not enough, we head to the Arizona desert. There resides my great friend and colleague, the fantasy golf oracle of PGAtour.com. It is the world famous Rob Bolton, ladies and gentlemen. Good afternoon, my man. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I'm awake. That's step one. On a Wednesday after two consecutive doubleheaders and all the preview material. Awesome to hear your voice, but you got to tell me something. Is this the phone call version, or is this the, we need to make this a podcast conversation, which is kind of the phone call version, or is this the, hey, buddy, this is live radio, watch your P's and Q's, Buster?
Well, the FCC has their opinion and I have mine. So, sadly, we'll have to go with theirs since we are over the air. But we will have just as much fun as is legally possible if that's okay with you.
Well, the FCC is entitled to its incorrect opinion. I'll just put it at that.
Good night, everybody. We'll see you next week. I was telling you off the air there a minute ago. Bill Burr, I get he's a big time famous comedian. Correct? That's what the kids tell me.
Yeah, you're going to jinx yourself right now, but go ahead.
Well, that's fine. That's exactly why I'm doing this, because there's no way this will happen. He is coming to the Simon Scott Assembly Hall, the home of the Indiana University men's basketball program, women's basketball program, and a very hallowed, famous arena here, and he's going to be doing a comedy event in September, and his people have reached out to my people, which is me, and have said, hey, would you like to interview Bill Burr? And I have yet to get back to them. I'm making them sweat a little bit. Is that a good idea or a bad idea?
I always love when comedians go on tour. They hope it's a comedic tour, right? They hope it is. That's the plan. They know what they're doing. But you got to make sure you let everybody on the Twitter know when this is going to happen so we can all tune in. That'll be a trip, man.
So, like you said, there's no chance of this happening, so we wanted just to get it out there. That's like when Adam Schefter friended me on Facebook, and we talked back and forth for a few days. That was a hot, hot summer romance that has since cooled, but that's okay. He's a very busy man breaking NFL stories.
I couldn't get you to stop talking about it.
Well, it was unbelievable. I didn't, and you're like, yeah, he follows me. What's the big deal? See, you're the oracle.
No, he doesn't, though.
We all go.
So he doesn't. So it was just, you know, it was just.
Was oh, he doesn't follow you?
Misguided jealousy or something.
I thought he did follow you.
No.
Well, he's a big fantasy golfer.
He doesn't have time for that.
He doesn't have time for me.
Busy guy.
He's busy. He should be busy. Rob Bolton is my guest. He is the man at PGAtour.com. He is in charge of the fantasy content. He makes the fantasy world go around. And both of the fans of the show requested your presence again after you were – was it the Masters? Was that what we did? We started the major season. We let Tulsa slide by somehow. But here we are again, the Open Championship. So I guess we're bookending the majors on this program. And it's great to have you. And as you mentioned, doubleheader weeks are always fun. The time change is always fun. But something about St. Andrews feels the gravitas of the event, the gravitas of the course, the history, the origins of the game. It's a little easier, at least for me, to get through. I know you've got heavier lifting than I do. What is your take on the home of golf? Is it just another week for you, or do you feel that sense as well?
Well, first of all, yeah, it was the Masters, which was awesome, and then you told me off-air that we'd do it again for the U.S. Open. I'm sorry, for the PGA Championship, and here we are for the Open Championship, three majors down the road. But not that I'm remembering that at all, but that's how it played out. Secondly, it's Jim Nantz, and you just incorrectly said it's not a time change, it's a time difference.
Oh.
You just got to adjust. Yeah, some things he says on the air, it's wrong. Just and he gets away with it because he's Jim Nantz. He really is the Oracle, right?
Oh, absolutely.
But it's a time difference, and we have to adjust. The Open Championship starts at 10:35 my time tonight. How great is that? And it is St. Andrews, and it's in high definition. We're old enough, you and me both, and both listeners are probably old enough to know and to remember when the tournament used to be on ABC and in standard def, and the ball would like zigzag back and forth across your you know, your 13-inch black and white, and you try to find it, and like, where is it? You don't know where it is. You just trust it. But then you see this, imagine, you know, this crazy imagery of black and white wispy grass, and it was great, and it still is great, but now it's in color, and it's in high definition, and we get all the great stuff. It, from, to answer your question, 3 minutes later, you know how I am, which is probably why I haven't been back in 3 months.
That's why I book you on the long portion of the long segment of the program.
Right. It is just another golf tournament. That's the way I, you know, approach every week. You know, people have asked me over the years, I'm sure they've asked you, hey, do you own any of these golfers, you know, that you're supporting or you're not supporting? And the answer is, yeah. I'm a player too, but it doesn't get in the way of the job, doesn't get in the way of the analysis. You and I both know we let the evidence come to us, and then we present it to you in our, you know, using our experience and our acumen, blah, blah, blah. But this is a pretty cool week. I mean, I wrote in the power rankings just below the fold there that it will crown a worthy champion, but it's worthy of the course, not because it's a worthy guy. You know what I mean? The course really is at the top of the power rankings of everything I could possibly do over a calendar year. And then obviously it's been 7 years since this course is hosted. So that's how much I respect it, how much I love it. And, you know, as again, we get it going out here on the West Coast at 10:35 p.m. So I might even be up for that.
Well, you get all lathered up, and then at 2:00, 2:30, you go to sleep. Then you wake up, and the day's over. Then the golf's done.
I do like your model version of it, yes. But I don't know if I'll make it tonight. The Wednesday nights are difficult, not to peek too much behind the curtain, but that's usually my early bedtime.
Well, I'm glad we've got you here in the early afternoon, 5:22 Eastern. What is it there? 2:22? 3:22? You have the weird
2:22.
Don't you have the Arizona time, your own time zone? Is that still a thing?
Oh, I could give you 5 minutes on that. But yeah, when we eventually change and no one has daylight saving time anymore, we'll be in Pacific.
All right. Well, that helps you.
Which is good.
In your world. It's funny about the standard definition, Peter, Alice, whatever the other traditions were. The last time they were at St. Andrews, the old course, or now all the hip journalists now refer to it as just the old, because I guess that's what the folks of Scotland call it. 2015 was Zach Johnson. In 2015, Zach Johnson was a very steady winner on tour. He was a President's Ryder Cupper. He was always in contention at Colonial and the John Deere, it seemed like. But we didn't talk about Zach Johnson in the majors parlance too much after he won incredibly in icy cold windy conditions at the Masters in 2007. Back to your point about St. Andrews identifying the player, I don't think any one of us had rushed Zach Johnson to the front in 2015. Are we going to see a similar winner like that this year, or what does St. Andrews have in store for us?
See, that's the other thing. That's the thing about my point about a worthy champion. Certainly Zach Johnson's worthy. It's not it. It's just that he's not that, you know, that first name that rushes to mind. And it's in part because the course can play kind of easy, you know. I mean, you're going to get some of that, and when you get a guy who strikes it as well as he does and playing relatively well like he was, you know, that's going to happen. I don't think I don't mean to make it sound like I'm not pleased about Zach Johnson winning an Open. It's just it's not the quintessential Open, right? And so if it was if St. Andrews was more difficult, it wouldn't be St. Andrews. It would just be another Open that we would have that cornerstone name probably emerge. And Zach Johnson, you know, he has been in various conversations to be part of the World Golf Hall of Fame. So, but he's just the guy that has never had any controversy or done anything wrong. And it's like, we don't really have much to associate with him except for success. Oh my gosh. So I'm not looking for somebody necessarily like that this week. At the same time, I mean, it's golf, so no one would be surprised if it happens either. I don't even know if you could, like, select a guy from the field who would be that guy right now, because we are 7 years down the road, and everybody who wants to make a name for themselves on social media has. So we have associated ourselves emotionally to so many of these guys. We like them, we love them, we hate them, we don't care. But we're or not that we don't care, but we don't like enough of them so that we're not really in that on that fence anymore. And Zach Johnson's just, I mean, I love him, but he's not what you would expect out of this tournament. And here's the thing about this, man. As you know, the Open Championship can reward 40-somethings. So right now I'd be surprised if he came out and won this thing, but it wouldn't be surprised if another 40-something, like an Adam Scott, for example, came out and won this thing.
Justin Rose, you can throw in that category as well.
Totally.
Guys with a little bit of experience. And how important is that experience this week? I think it's tremendously important. I know you heard Jack's comments. I don't know if it was yesterday or Monday, like you, all the days run together now. It's Wednesday afternoon, where he talked about, they asked him, hey, the scores, this could be high scoring, low scoring in golf parlance. It could be low scoring and it could be easy. And Jack's response was great. So what? It's going to identify who can play, because you still have to navigate 110-odd bunkers. You still have to play the ball on the ground. Mother Nature's still going to be involved. And Jack's theory was, hey, everybody's going to hit the green. You better find some guys that can putt, and there's still going to be golf balls off the tee that are going to find bunkers. You got to learn how to take your medicine. I think that goes back to your point of having experience and the 40-year-olds perhaps having a chance. And number two, the course is going to be very dry, which should shrink it up a bit.
Sometimes with a question like that, and this is one of the drawbacks, you know, working alone and virtually, you don't get to have these conversations like sort of in real time. But, like, who asked that question and why? What are you fishing for there? Because the Open Championship proved how many decades ago that it's not about score in relation to par. It's just about fewest strokes. Who cares? And he's answered – you can go back in time to this question or a version of this question, a variation of this question about St. Andrews being relatively easy, right, compared to the other – open courses in the rota, and he's said, hey, look, you know, back then we didn't count, you know, relation apart, we just counted the fewer strokes, and that's what goes into the history book, you know, in terms of the winner, and the score is secondary, it's not the headline. So I'm just wondering, like, why a question like that would even matter. So I agree with Jack, and I don't agree with him with you know, with everything, but that particular one,
I think he was right fishing response. For the ball goes too far, the club heads, the equipment, okay. the fitness, the mental I don't know. That would be my thought, because Jack's been a proponent of dialing back the golf ball. He's been a proponent, because there's no more room on St. Andrews to build anything. They have they have like 22 square feet there that's left. And it's like
for the tee box on top of the
it'll look like Top Golf, right? Where they'll just start stacking levels. Levels, Jerry, levels. We'll just go higher. But you can't do that.
Right.
So
not a window.
and Jack is always going to give his opinion. That's the other great thing about asking him the questions. But I thought it was more interesting in the navigation of the golf ball, because in this day and age, what do all the metrics tell us? Hit it as far as you can, have a shorter club in your hands, and the numbers tell us that's the way to play it. Jack made it sound like there has to be a little bit more artistry than opposed to the hammer versus the nail.
Well, that's good. I didn't get the full quote. Major weeks, I don't get to consume as much as I wish I could, but that's good to hear. But again, I go back to the question. Like, in any other week, you're going to get Jack Nicklaus. You're going to ask the question you've been sitting on for a year since the last time you got a chance to talk to him, right? If you weren't at Memorial, or you know sneak some behind the lines down there at Medalist or something, or the Bears Club, or wherever he is down there in South Florida, like, you know, kind of get it out there in the open. It has us talking about it. I think it's better than some of the other things that have been drawing headlines lately. But it seems like we keep on talking about this golf ball, and Nicklaus' impact or influence on it hasn't really done much yet. So will it do anything more now? Is it worth still asking a question like that now? I don't know.
The home of golf, 1873, the first time that St. Andrews, the old course, has hosted. This will be edition number 30. Believe it or not, I play in a 17-man weekly fantasy league, as you know. 2/17 of my league are on property as we speak. And my other buddy, who is not in our league but is a city champion and is my golf for our city tournament, which is going on. He's my golf insider there. He is also there. So I have three people from my small little burg that are on property this week. So seeing the pictures, fantastic. You've seen the green. You've seen the golds. You've seen the tan. You've heard Tiger Woods comment that the fairways might be faster than the greens. How important is that in getting your lineups, getting your bets, getting your pick one from each four groups set up this week? It should be shorter, but I think it's harder when it plays that fast.
Yeah, it's definitely a shorter course as a result. I think, you know, the wind is the number one, right? That's the first thing we look at. And it's going to be pretty calm for the first 2 days. So there's going to be not expecting either side of the draw to be penalized or to benefit. So everybody will be happy about that come the conclusion of two rounds, at least in theory. And then it comes down to knowing where to miss, you know, buddy. This course with the 112 bunkers, you don't want to be in any of them. There's less sand in the bunkers this year. They really want to make them a true hazard. Get away from, you know, aiming at them so you're staying out of long grass or worse. And obviously you're going to have the various course, the various bunkers, certainly the roll hole bunker being prominent, that are true hazards no matter how much sand's in them. But I think understanding where to miss and understanding where to land the ball on the hundreds of thousands of square feet of greens is going to be key, and that's where the experience and the proper preparation comes into play. That's why experience and you know, wisdom and maturity and a man of a certain age tends to prevail on a course like this. But obviously, the so many young guys inside the top 20 of the world ranking and you know, crushing the PGA Tour right now, that we wouldn't be surprised if a 20-something also wins. But I think an acceptance of the fact that, a little bit like last week, you know, the guys who embraced the Renaissance Club down there in North Berwick, like, the ball's going to go where the ball's going to go. You know, you want to keep it out of the wind. You want to try to flight it down or just try to enjoy yourself. So the guys who maybe don't accept that right away, and it's going to be, you know, few and far between. These are professional golfers, most of them at least. And are, you know, with a chance to win this thing, and then go from there. Stick to your process and all that sort of thing. But it's going to be a fair fight in the first two rounds, and that's really the first hurdle for this thing.
Excellent. Rob Bolton is our guest at Rob Bolton Golf on the old Twitterverse. Rob, the lead head concho. What is your official title anyhow? You are the, I'm going with Oracle and staying with it, PGAtour.com, my colleague, my great buddy. All right, yeah. We've set the pins up for bowling. We'll get into the players when we come back. We'll tell you how to construct your lineup. We'll look at favorites and sleepers and all that fun stuff as well. Time out to pay the bills. The Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour rolls on here on a midweek Wednesday. Summertime, the Crazy Horse Tavern, hit the patio. 80 domestic craft and imported beers, hundreds of rare high-end whiskeys and tequilas, fabulous drink specials daily. They're open at 11 for lunch, dinner, or late night. And be hungry on the weekend because brunch starts at 11 as well. We'll let Rob get a refill. I will fill my glass up. You do the same. Time out quickly. Diane Daly's news headlines. More with Rob Bolton from PGAtour.com next.
Come together on Kirkwood for brunch at the Crazy Horse every Saturday and Sunday from 11 to 3. Start with their $3 mimosas, screwdrivers, or Bloody Marys. And then get ready for handmade, original entree items like Hoosier Hash, Steak and Eggs Ranchero, Tenderloin Benedict, or Pecan Crusted French Toast, to name a few. Weekend brunch at the Crazy Horse makes any weekend special and makes you happy to be an adult. The Crazy Horse Tavern on Kirkwood. Open daily at 11 for lunch, dinner, or late night.
I'm Diane Daly for News Sports Talk 98.7 and AM 1370 WGCL. This news brought to you by Green & Schultz Trial Lawyers. An early morning shooting in Bloomington on Monday remains under investigation today. A caller to emergency dispatch reported hearing a gunshot in the 400 block of South Walnut around 1:15 Monday morning, and that was followed by someone yelling for help. Officers at the scene found a man lying in the street with a gunshot wound to his chest. The victim told police that he was walking down Walnut when a vehicle pulled up next to him. Two people in the vehicle brandished handguns, and then one of them shot at him. The man was initially taken to IU Health Bloomington Hospital for treatment, but was later flown to a hospital in Indianapolis. Authorities say an accident involving three Duke Energy workers should serve as a reminder to slow down when entering a work zone. Utility workers were at a site in Putnam County when they were hit by a car after it struck their work truck yesterday morning. The car was reportedly traveling at a high rate of speed as it came up over the crest of a hill. The driver ended up hitting a second truck before coming to a complete stop. Fortunately, no serious injuries were reported. The Indiana Department of Health is giving Hoosier families a break with easy access to required immunizations this year. The department is joining with healthcare agencies around the state to host immunization clinics prior to the start of the school year. The immunizations are offered free of charge, but parents are asked to bring current insurance information with them. The clinics are open to children age 5 and up. Finally, a popular restaurant chain is moving ahead with plans to open a new location on Kirkwood Avenue in Bloomington. Raising Cane's wants to have the restaurant up and running by the end of next month. 4 other Indiana locations will be added. The chain was established in Baton Rouge, Louisiana in 1996. This news was brought to you by Green and Schultz Trial Lawyers. For your local news, sports, and weather, you can always visit WGCLradio.com. Hope your Wednesday goes well. I'm Diane Daly.
Are you tired of eyeglasses? The Eye Center of Southern Indiana has a solution for you. We offer the ultimate in advanced technology to help correct your vision to be independent from your eyeglasses. Come in today for your free consultation to see if you're a candidate for custom LASIK treatment designed specifically for you. Our world-class physicians and unsurpassed LASIK experience is right for you. Call today at 812-334-1213. Are you ready for LASIK? The Eye Center is ready for you.
Folks, Black Lumber has been around since 1928, serving Bloomington's home improvement and new construction needs. At Black Lumber, you can get Marvin and Son windows, Therma-Tru doors, Schlage and M-Tech lock sets, and so much more. You like tools? Stop in at Black Lumber and check out our full line of Makita power tools and batteries. Black Lumber, 1710 South Henderson, a safe and friendly place to shop. Why go anywhere else? Black Lumber.
Welcome back to Glass in the Afternoon, Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour, New Sports Talk 98.7 AM 1370 and WGCLradio.com. Thank you for making us part of your afternoon, and hopefully you are glued to your radio. Rob Bolton from PGAtour.com joining me at Rob Bolton Golf on the Twitterverse, and we're talking all Open Championship until the top of the hour. We'll send it to CBS Sports tonight. Bottom of the 6 o'clock hour, 6:35. Tommy Thrall's pregame, the Reds in the Bronx. The Redlegs trying to take the three-game series from the Yankees after their unbelievable come-from-behind victory last night. 4-3 winners. They will send Mike Minor, the lefty, to the hill tonight to face Luis Severino in the Yankee lineup. First pitch from the Bronx at 7:05. You can see our full red schedule at WGCLradio.com. Rob writes the power rankings for PGAtour.com, as you hopefully will read weekly, just not on major championships. And we know it's busy. We're not going to talk to Barracuda today, so I'll give you a little break on that. But when we start looking at guys that are lining up, we set the table in the first segment there about who we should be looking at, who the course is going to quote-unquote favor or anything else. But when you look at the penultimate reason of getting this, the ultimate reason is the guys who are going to tee it up. The tee times start on tee number one and only tee number one, and we'll start at 1:35 and go to, 4:15. So that's a long day for the starter. But you're starting with the top of your list on top of the power rankings, Rory McIlroy. Not a difficult case to make for him, even though he's not the number one player in the world.
No, he's not. He could be and has been.
And will be again.
Glued to the radio. That was your blog back in the 1998 season, wasn't it? Glued to the radio.
Still,
that sounds about right.
It still is. It does.
And as far as the Barracuda, by the way, one of my favorite events. I don't want to just gloss over it. Six consecutive first-time winners. In that event, Old Greenwood, third time hosting. I love that tournament. The scoring and the possibilities this time of the season. Great stories. But anyway, Rory number one, and John Rahm number two, Matt Fitzpatrick number three, Scottie Scheffler number four, and then the hottest man on the planet, Xander Schauffele, number five. I mean, look, each of these guys comes in with incredibly strong angles for their various reasons, and the course is not going to be tricky, for anybody, because it's right out there in front of them. You just got to plan. And I like that McElroy is in the place where he is as it concerns where we are on the stage of world, the world stage of golf right now. The statement victory in Canada, his rhetoric immediately following. Who doesn't love that if you love Rory McIlroy and love, you know, good things? You know, that's kind of how I felt about that. And that motivational element for him specifically right now, I think, pushes him to the top, even though I don't write about it specifically. You know, that contributes to my confidence in the guy. We go back how long you want to go back. I mean, he gets so much more out of his A game, or his B game, rather, than maybe anybody else right now on the planet. And he's looking for something to challenge him. Well, he found something recently, hadn't he? And we're talking about LIV Golf, by the way. That you know, he's basically the voice of the players of the PGA Tour right now. And he is arguably, well, he is one of the best players, but near the top among the best of the best. So this right now would be his time to deliver it again. And then just one more, Jon Rahm, just because Seve won here in 84, and he's talked about how much it means to him. And Jon Rahm's going to get other chances to win at St. Andrews, but you know, he's also been playing exceptionally well. Won in Mexico while he was the favorite, and didn't say it mattered to him, but he was the favorite. Was the favorite of Torrey Pines last year for the U.S. Open, won that. Again, it's about comfort for that guy, and his motivation is in a different place than Rory's. So those guys, those two specifically, pal, an easy 1-2.
And Rahm has not been playing great by Rahm's standards. His best finish since that win in Mexico is just top 10. He hit it all over the shop last week in at the Renaissance Club. But the other factors that come into play here that there isn't a column to research or read is these events mean more to the top players, and they try to tell you that more often than not. But this is where they gear their schedules and their games up. So sometimes the regular, quote-unquote, run-of-the-mill events aren't the proper measuring stick. The measuring stick is against the best on the best courses.
Yeah, I think the more you pay attention, and again, that's why we're paid to do what we do, is to present that and relay that to the audience. When Jon Rahm played the Fortinet to open the season, I mean, nothing made sense that he was going to play well that week. He had the Ryder Cup coming up. He needed to check off the new event, you know, because he's not going to reach 25 for that provision to remain, you know, to keep his PGA Tour membership. So I wrote in Golf Bet that week, it was like plus 750 to miss the cut, and he missed the cut. So he paid that off, and then he went out and had a pretty decent Ryder Cup, even in a losing cause, and he's played pretty well overall since. But that was a pretty easy week. He kind of just lays it out there for you. Kind of know, you know, and if you don't have experience following the game and listening to these guys, and you know, you weed out the stuff that doesn't matter from a few of them, but he's been forthright. Him, McIlroy, and a bunch of other guys, especially of the younger generation, they're thoughtful, they put their sentences together, they use their words, and they present it in a way that makes sense for us, and we can actually hang our visors on them when it comes to, you know, investments like PGA Tour Fantasy Golf and other pursuits.
Now, the two players we've just mentioned have major championships underneath their belts. The players at the Old Course, St. Andrews, Louis Oosthuizen, 2010, I believe is the only one in recent memory who picked up his first major championship in this event. Well, I guess that opens the door for guys like Xander Schauffele, Tommy Fleetwood, Will Zalatoris, some other guys you have in the top 10. The angle this week is they don't know enough and that won't bother them, or they're just pretty talented and can and pull this off because they have enough either scar tissue or experience to do so.
Yeah, if we spend enough time, you could probably argue both of those and probably pretty strongly, you know what I mean? I like the latter, though. I think, you know, these guys are talented. They're comfortable in their own skin. They've been playing well enough, and you know, winning is hard, and, you know, we can get carried away with, oh, you have only three wins. Well, I only have one. Yeah, major. Well, I mean, there are sillier things to argue about, and there are much more important things that we should be arguing about that are not taken as seriously. So I'm kind of in between on that specifically. Looking at form upon arrival, again, this course is going to play fairly the first two rounds. That's what we look for in this particular event. And then we let the guys go to work. Saturday might be a little bit more challenging. So I like course management even more than I do the first two rounds on Saturday. So a score in the 60s potentially would be a real, you know, real mover on moving day, whereas a 72 might be okay, you know, and you're not going to get much done, but, you know, maybe you stay in position for the weekend. And again, when we think about the challenge in an event like this, we look to the guys with that experience.
Rob Bolton is our guest at Rob Bolton Golf on the Twitterverse, the king of fantasy golf writing in America, PGA Tour guy, king, Oracle.
You don't have any titles, but you come up with like 11 of them.
Well, that's right. Well, I haven't decided which one I'm going to stick with yet. And experience is a great factor, and we talked about that in the first segment about it. Where does Jordan Spieth fall in here? Jack Nicklaus put this seed in my head about talking about, well, everybody's going to hit greens this week, but you got to putt. And I wrote today, imagine 5 years, well, he won in 17 at Birkdale, is that right? 2017 at Birkdale?
Right.
Imagine 5 years later writing about how Jordan Spieth is struggling with putting. It's the whole thing.
Well, the narrative for Spieth this year is that he's hitting it longer, and, you know, you can't keep all of the plates spinning all at once, can you? and he's as one of the world's best putters, if he retreats to like 35th or whatever he is, that's still pretty damn good. So again, we're getting into the, you know, my bank account is bigger than your bank account, even though we both have nine digits in front of the decimal point. So whatever. It comes down to this week. It comes down to the experience. He's a former champion. He's never missed a cut in this event. Talking about Spieth. And again, with these greens, Spieth himself has talked about it being, you know, potentially a putting contest. Again, the analytics bear that out. Fairways hit is all but irrelevant. Most of the fields can average 14, 15 greens in regulation per round. The guys that are scoring well are going to have even more than that. I wrote that Scottie Scheffler, who leads the tour in greens, hit may not even miss one all week. That's the kind of thing. So it's not even an analytical approach. It's about understanding where to land the ball on the green to give yourself the good look for those birdie putts, because there are many places where you could three putt without even wondering if you could possibly two putt, and four putts will be out there. That's just the way this goes. So in the sort of the crude terms, it is a putting contest, but it's also more importantly where you land the ball and then go from there. So precision on approach, I think, is probably the 1A priority of the week.
And that makes sense, because one putting for five or six, that's not going to help you, but it'll make your putting stats look fantastic. Colin Morikawa pulled off a feat that we hadn't seen in since old Ben Curtis back in 2003. Shows up at the Open Championship for the first time, goes out, shoots four rounds in the 60s, 15 under par in benign conditions, throws his palms up to the air and says, "What the hell is so hard about this?"
Gotta love it, huh? How easy is it to make this thing look?
Let me show up at the PGA Championship and do the same thing. But Morikawa's hitting it a little goofy here the last month or so.
Yeah, but as you said, and as I wrote, and I'm sure you wrote too, man, like, these are big players in big games, and they tend to show up for these things. I have already compared, and you know, it's out there in other places, and I started doing this a while ago, you know, starting compared Morikawa's career to Tiger Woods' career. There are parallels you can draw that don't make that sound too crazy. Now, there's a long way to go, no one else can compare to it at Morikawa's age and what he's already achieved. So to have that comportment, to have that mental acuity to be able to deliver in situations like this, a guy like that, that's who you want to watch. Now, no matter how he's playing upon arrival, because he gets it. And he figures it out. He's so smart. A lot of these guys are smart, but he has this another gear of in between his ears that forces you to watch. And then he goes out and he wants to crush you. And so he has the it factor. He is number 8 in the power rankings, which looks like an insult, but I mean, again, as you said, he's not playing all that great, so it's still a boost of confidence that I have in this guy because of those unquantifiables.
All right, we've got 5 minutes left, so we're going to cram in one more known player, and then we'll head to the sleeper realm because I know people love to throw that into their teams and their pick one from each columns to try to win these things. We know who the good players are. Here comes Tiger Woods. He's geared up his entire spring and summer for this event. Flat course. He's won it twice. He's still 45, 44. What? I've lost track.
He's 46.
He's 46. Yeah. You said earlier this could break the way of someone in their 40s. Nobody knows it better, I would argue, than Woods. Can we make a case for Tiger this week, or should we just sit back and enjoy the fact that he's in the field?
Can you make a case? You can always make a case.
With somebody else's money, you can make a better case, right?
Yeah, make it some funny looks if you do. I have him at plus 100 for a top 40. And, I come in at it from a conservative standpoint. I really like to keep the money as much as I can. But for a top 40, you know, given everything, that's not bad. You're getting your money back times two, right? So that's fine. But what I need him to do is stay out of the bunkers with that leg. You know,
yeah, that cancels out the flat walk, doesn't it?
There are some of these bunkers where, say again?
That cancels out the flat walk if you're in the bunkers all the time.
Yeah, I mean, these lies. If he has to lean on that leg in certain circumstances and he's kneeling on his left, I mean, he's going to have to be so creative. I mean, it's going to be compelling if he's in one of those things. I'll drop everything I'm doing. Not that I don't already when he's playing, but to see what he does and how he gets out of it. I'm just skeptical of that. I have said this week that maybe he takes a penalty, but because you can control the lie on a penalty if the lie doesn't fit his leg. I don't know. You know, he hasn't been entirely open about exactly what's wrong with it, other than we see him limping around and he couldn't even finish the U.S. Open. And he's in it to win it. So when he's not in it to win it, you know, it makes sense to save the body. These are just so many big question marks. So I've retreated to a top 40, but you can certainly make a case. That's a conversation you have on Sunday morning if he's, let's say, five back.
Well, that'd be interesting, wouldn't it? That would be interesting. All right, give us a couple sleepers. You write about them at PGAtour.com, and you've got them from all over the globe. China, South Africa, the USA, Colombia, and Japan. Oh, very well, sadly, no one's from Antarctica, so we'll have to leave them out.
I did have a conversation with somebody on Twitter once about somebody in the world ranking one day will have been born in Antarctica. We did some research on that. This is many, 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 many years ago. And there was at the time only 33 people ever. And like the oldest person was like 30. So, and not a golfer. So
odds are dwindling.
Hey, one day, man. Yeah, well, I'll see that as a prop bet somewhere. You know, when will that happen? Two sleepers, I think, deserve some attention in different ways. Christian Bezuidenhout,
Gesundheit.
South African, playing really well. Co-runner up at the Deer, top 20 last week. So the form is there. I have him as a top plus 300 for a top 20, plus 450 as the top South African, and only Louis Oosthuizen is ahead of him in terms of those 12 from South Africa. So I've broken down that a little bit. He's my top sleeper. But the one that I'm really looking forward to watching is Keita Nakajima from Japan. He's plus 1,400 for a top 20. And you'll say, well, obviously that's just throwing your money away. No. The last time we had a top 20 in this particular tournament, in the Open Championship, was in 2015 at St. Andrews. That was the last time it happened. All of them in between, like no better than like a T64, something like that. And that year, three guys finished inside the top 15. That was also the year that Paul Dunn, an amateur at the time, co-led the tournament at St. Andrews after 54 holes, finished T30. So he wasn't even the low am that week. He was fourth lowest am. So it's possible. This is the course. Again, when we're looking at an amateur playing well, you want the course to be easier. That's ideally the process. And in this event, and Nakajima has been the number one amateur in the world for well over a year. He plays only pro events other than worldwide or Japanese, like the Japanese Amateur Championship. He plays in only those. So that's why he's been able to sustain his world ranking. Won the Panasonic Open, which is a pro event on the Japan Golf Tour last September. It's likely that he'll turn pro, if not after this event, very soon. He wants to be a PGA Tour member, so who knows? Maybe he does it after this week and gets a couple of sponsor exemptions, and he's in the KFT finals in a month. We'll see. But for me, 1400 plus 1400 for a top 20. You can backtrack to a top 40 if you want, if you're not that interested. But why not? If it's for five units, throw it at the top 20 and throw another five at the top 40. Why not? I mean, this guy is really compelling, and I think for amateurs at this event, that's the storyline.
And the storyline will tee off in about, 7 hours and, change. It's not very long from now. I'll let you get rested up, my friend. I appreciate your time. I promise we will have you back. We will determine the next major event for this. Maybe it will be the FedEx Cup playoffs. Maybe we'll get going for that. Or who knows, maybe the Wyndham for the last chance saloon where everybody is trying to angle their way in. So we'll have plenty to watch this weekend. Best of luck to all of your picks, and you guys can play against us if you go to pgatour.com. Go to the Pick'em, sign up there, and try to beat Rob, which you won't do. But you can probably take a shot at me, though. That'll be fun. Hey, thanks for your time, man. Awesome job as always, my man.
And to both listeners, I just want to tell them that Glass really is the best. Thanks for listening today.
Thank goodness we recorded this, and it'll be on our website tomorrow afternoon. And then you can go back and see how our picks finally, at least through round one, went. Thanks, man. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it, pal.